Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.
And welcome to a Coffee with Karen then. Cup of positivity with just a sprinkling of woo-woo, where each week my guests tend to be in the coaching arena, either coaches, therapists, healers, people that basically help others, their service providers to help either with the mental, the physical, or the spiritual perspective, or what tends to happen, it can be any combination of those three or all three. So I am your host, Karen Roberts. I do come from a very physical background, I would say. 27 years as a sports therapist, 25 years personal trainer in the fitness industry, then moved on to nutrition. Now, through being online, my focus is really helping other coaches, consultants, therapists, and healers build their business online. Because what I've found, and especially by talking to them, is actually they tend to be very good at giving and maybe not so good at receiving. So I suppose that is my mission, to help them, you know, expand their audience and to be able to serve more people. And in return, obviously, they get paid more money. So my guest today, Jaswinder, well, I'll allow you to share with the audience a little bit about who you are, what you do, and share a bit of your story, please.
Hello, Karen. Thank you for having me on this space here with you. And hello to everybody who's watching, whether it's a replay or whenever. Okay, so I have been in the field of helping people, I suppose, all my life, you know, even when I was young growing up. Being the eldest female, I was the one looking after everybody. So it kind of started from there, really. And, you know, it was like looking after my younger siblings, looking after my parents in terms of, you know, like ensuring things were always done because they were busy working. And so I kind of grew up with this attitude of helping, supporting, serving, and I've carried on, really. You know, later on, though, rather than it just being kind of giving, you know, just because I was conditioned in that way to, because of patterns or whatever, it was more a choice I made, a conscious choice. And it was because of the way events had led me to those choices. I heard you say that you come from, you know, the background that's been very physical. And it's really interesting to hear you say that, because mine, that was the least in terms of how I saw it, because it was very spiritual, very emotional, you know, but the physical has been there, and it is there because I do yoga. But even a lot of my yoga was and has been very spiritually guided, if you see what I mean.
Absolutely. I would say yoga is very much all three. It's very holistic. Mm-hmm. It's very spiritual. There is the mental aspect and the physical. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I then before actually teaching yoga, I became a therapist. I trained to be a therapist, a counselor, psychotherapist, and then I trained to be a hypnotherapist. And I started my seeing clients over 30 years ago now. And I started teaching very early on as well, counseling, hypnotherapy. And then I started teaching yoga as well. So, I've been in that field of helping and have enjoyed it very much. I just finished with one of my classes last week, and, you know, they gave me a gratitude card and with all their little messages in it. And it was just, you know, when I read each one's message of how I've helped them in their journey and how much they enjoyed this 1 year with me, it just really touched my heart. I was in tears as I was going through reading each one. It was like, oh, this is just like, you know, wow. So
yeah, that's better than actually, it's more important than actually getting paid for what you do, isn't it? Right. It's the knowledge that you've actually helped you, that you've benefited them in some way. You can't put a price tag on that, can you?
No. And even today, I mean, I had my yoga class today because also I've been asked this next Tuesday. It's World Yoga Day. And I've been asked to be a speaker. And so I was asking my students in the yoga class today if they could just give me a line or two of the benefit they get from yoga. And they were saying, you know, like how they find that it's calming, it's relaxing, it stretches the body, works on muscles they haven't used before. And on top of that, they were saying, well, we like coming to your class because you're a brilliant teacher. So, you know, it's all of that, everything put together. So I do various things. And on top of all that, during pandemic, I actually wrote, co-authored 10 books.
Wow.
And yeah. And so now I'm writing my own book, and it's based very much on oppression because, you know, in life, we all experience oppression, whether we know it or not. Some obviously go through more extremes of it than others, but we have all been oppressed in some way or another. And so this is kind of looking at it from many angles. But what I do in this book is I kind of like also bring my own journey in it, and then also the healing, the how to get over it. So giving tips and ideas of what to do in right. You know, in the situations. So it's kind of going to be like a very self-help type book as well. And I've already won an award for it, an international book award, and by another organization who are globally working on issues of abuse, and they've asked me to be a speaker at their conference in October in America, Houston,
Texas. Lovely. Congratulations.
Thank you. Can you
share with the audience a little bit about your story? So how did you come to this place of then wanting to help people that have gone through oppression? What can you share your story with that regard?
Yes. Okay. I have been through oppression, quite a lot of it from different angles, and I've been healing it. And that's why when I was thinking about, you know, what to write, I kind of originally thought I was going to do like an autobiography of my life. And, you know, I said early on, right at the beginning, that I work spiritually. I went to a spiritual ceremony, and I was given guidance there from the spirits that I had to write this book, and I was shown the vision of the whole book and, you know, what they wanted me to write. And at that time, I wasn't very clear in terms of, you know, what they were wanting me to write within the book. They just wanted this book and I had to do it. And I didn't take much notice of it, you know, kind of like after that as well. And but things were happening that kept bringing me back to it and kept bringing me back to it because they want it done, you know. So when spirit have a task for you, they won't let you go until you deliver it. It's almost like, yeah, it's almost like it's like a command from them, you know, and they give you that revelation that this is your task. And although I've tried to ignore it and I've tried to run away from it, things have happened in my life that have brought me back to it. So I have accepted it now, and I have, you know, taken it on board, and I have written the book, the first draft. I've still got to tweak it quite a bit yet. So I have been through oppression in various ways, culturally, you know, like my community, the culture that the whole community still follow is very oppressive. I come from, in terms of in India, the hierarchical system of classes in terms of your caste, that is so oppressive because we are right down at the bottom. And so you are oppressed by all the upper castes. And so that in itself is oppression. So I have taken on these kind of, like the experiences, but also the beliefs from a young age of oppression. And then to top it up, you also have patriarchy as a woman. So can you see how it was coming at me from many angles?
Yeah, sure. From a very young age, you were being brainwashed.
Exactly. You know, so my community, if you think about the Indian culture, full stop, is very patriarchal, very, very patriarchal. So if you think about the fact that with the Indian culture being patriarchal, then the hierarchy system, and you're right at the bottom, you're being downtrodden by everybody.
Wow.
By everybody. And so what happened was, when I went into relationships, what happened? I was oppressed. When I went into friendships, what happened? I was oppressed. When I went into work, bosses, what happened? I was oppressed. Because that's what was happening to me. That was what my conditioning was all about. I needed to learn tools, techniques to start to fight the oppression. I really like a quote by, I think it's Martin Luther King, or it might have been Malcolm X. Excuse me if I've got it wrong, but one of them. Mm-hmm. What they said was that you, as the oppressed, have to stand up to the oppressor, because the oppressor will never back down. Mm-hmm. They will never back down because they are so used to having that privilege of oppressing you. So you, as the oppressed, have to stand up to them. And because of that, I realized that, you know, like, I had to take it into my own hands and start to fight back. And so then I also learned that fighting back and coming out of oppression is where the freedom lies as well, where you liberate yourself and where you're then, Nelson Mandela did say it's a long walk to freedom. Mm-hmm. And he was right. And this is another thing, you see, because of the type of oppression I've been through in my community as a collective, mm-hmm. The people that I looked to for inspiration, for guidance and help and role models were Black people from America. Because they had been through these trials and tribulations. They were coming out of it. And so they are the ones that have written the stories. They are the ones that have the experience, the wisdom that is helping people like my community, you know. So we are looking to them, if you see what I mean. And I get, you know, and I couldn't understand why I was always into in my 70s growing up, like I was into Black people soul music, jazz music. I was watching Roots. I couldn't understand why until I started writing this book.
Wow.
And when I was writing this book, it started to all fall into place, you know.
Okay. So subconsciously, this was probably a very unconscious decision. You were seeing that they were going through the things that you were going through now, and that actually, yeah. You know, whether completely come out of it or not is another thing, but obviously, definitely things have massively improved. Yeah. Whereas, you know, I would hasten to add that maybe actually there might have been, you know, in some cases it was more intense because obviously they were actual slaves, but on the other side of it, they probably didn't have the cultural issues that you're talking about here, where women are being oppressed, maybe a little bit, but not so intense. And then what you're talking about, the hierarchy, about this this caste system. So actually, what you're describing to me is actually you actually got quite a lot more going on that you need to overcome.
You're absolutely right, Karen, because like Martin Luther King had, you know, the black people had in America, there was a similar icon in India, Dr. Ambedkar. Now he was, believe it or not, from the lowest caste, but he worked his way up because he was, you know, he was kind of, again, I think he was spiritually guided because he was able to go to America and go to study law. He came to England as well, and he studied here as well for a while. But he became India's first law minister, And he is the one that wrote the constitution. And he is the one that said that the Dalit woman is the most oppressed woman on earth. And he said the Dalit person, meaning anybody from that community, they have been more enslaved than anybody else on earth because of the length of duration, because it's been going on longer than the black slavery, and it still goes on today. They have faced severe atrocities. I was looking at some, you know, because like I've watched some of the films of black slavery and some programs and things, and when they showed me how children were treated to work by the fires and things that they had to do was so similar to what the, you know, my community had to do in India.
Really?
Very similar things, very similar, so many parallels going on. So there is a lot there, a lot of work to do. So that now I know why Spirit said you have to write this book.
Right.
Because things are still very hidden, things are still very like hushed up, because the people there that live in India, they still don't open their mouth so much, because what happens is you may be it's a little bit more difficult now, but in the past you would just be shot dead or burnt dead or whatever. But I've been looking at statistics, and women are raped daily. Every 8 minutes there is a Dalit woman being raped. There is somebody still being murdered every day. There are still so many atrocities, because when you're right at the bottom of the ladder, everybody else at the top is just going to pick on you, and you know they're going to take advantage, exploit you, manipulate you. And I had been through quite a lot of this, so I went through exploitation in my marriages, and I went through as a woman, you know, because of the patriarchal control. Because you see what happens is, you know, like the men, because they have been oppressed by the upper castes and classes, so the men then, because you know sometimes when we have a certain privilege, then you know, and if it's toxic, we will still project it out onto somebody else. So the men, the only way they can maintain their level of authority or superiority is by controlling the woman. And you know, then the woman, is experiencing abuse, oppression, and all
absolutely.
Of that. And the man is trying to maintain his masculinity, like, yeah. I'm in charge, I'm the boss.
Well, I suppose it's because they haven't gone through a healing process from what they've yeah. gone on. And that's why we see in any community all of this, mm. the abused quite often becomes the abuser. And for a lot of us who haven't, you know, who've had the privilege, I suppose, in a way, of not having gone through stuff, it's easy for us to think, well, why would you do that? But actually, if you look at it on the emotional scale, if you're really down here in the depths of despair, to go up the emotional scale, the next step would be revenge, wouldn't it? To actually take, but if they were given the help, they could then go from revenge maybe to anger or resentment and continue up. But because they're being kept down there, that is their way, because they know no better.
Yeah.
Is to then control the way. You can see as somebody, you know, stepping back and looking how it works, you could see how people can get trapped in that kind of a system. Which is horrendous, because then women really are really, there's no place for them to go. There's no escape.
Absolutely. There is. That's right. And it's all about education. It's all about teaching, you know, just like I had to learn myself, the tools, the techniques, you know, the assertiveness skills, the voicing, you know, all of that I had to learn. Otherwise, I would have carried on being oppressed, carried on being abused, you know. So, yeah, it's everybody has to kind of learn and, you know, take responsibility. I mean, I remember, you see, I've done a lot of counselling work in the Asian community and working with women, you know, victims of domestic abuse. And they do say a lot of the time that their husbands, they have no idea what they're doing, because when they go and tell them what you're doing is wrong, it's abuse, they don't see it as that, because some of it is also the boundaries are confused with what is cultural and what is abuse. So there is a confusion there in terms of understanding and the boundaries are. Because you see, my parents, when I left school, I was forced into a marriage. Now, there was no law in England at that time for forced marriage. My parents didn't see it as a forced marriage, because they were doing what everybody else was doing. It was just like, you got to get married. All the girls are getting married. You got to get married. They had no concept or idea that it was forced, because to them, that was the norm, because they got married young, and everybody around them when they were growing up got married young. And so when I left school, all the Indian girls I went to school with were getting married as well. But I wanted to study and I didn't want to get married. And I was kind of like forced into it, saying that you have to, it's the norm, this is what we do, etc., etc. So what I experienced and went through later on, when the laws did come out and I was involved, partly involved in that process, because I was already counselling at the Women's Centre and we were taking details of how many people were coming through the door that had experienced a forced marriage. And so we were collating these numbers for the government, so that all of, you know, the information could be put together to bring out the law. Then in 2014, it was passed that a forced marriage is going to be seen as a criminal activity, because you know, when I was working at the Women's Center, even then so many children, young girls, were being taken out of school, taken abroad on the context, you know, on pretending that it was a holiday, and then being forced into a marriage and sometimes even left there.
Ugh, horrendous. At a young
14, 15, 16, you know. So because of the law, because now you will get fined, you will be put into prison. So because this awareness is trickling through now to people, they're a bit more reluctant. So it's working. So,
but so, it's quite incredible to think that really only 2014. I mean, that's not that long. You know, if you know, I would have just presumed that that was law, you know, 20, 30 years ago even. Yeah. And it's incredible that it's taken up till now for them to do something about it. And you know, I know it happens. I was brought, my children were brought up in Portugal, and they had a similar issue with, I suppose you'd call them gypsies, I suppose, the sort of gypsy groups over there had the same thing, and that they had the same problem there. But there was no law to protect these poor girls that were in the same school as my daughter. And you knew that at a certain age they were going to be taken out of school and married off. And it mm-hmm. it's quite horrific to think that in these days, in Europe, you know, in the West, that it's still allowed to happen. In some countries still. So, well, at least we've finally done something about it. So have you seen, with your work as a counsellor, have you seen a massive change in those last sort of, what's that, 8 years?
Yes, the change is happening. There has been a slight reduction every year now in terms of, you know, there is still a lot of coerciveness going on, obviously, and there still has been cases, but there has been a reduction. There has, definitely.
Thank you.
But that's just the forced marriage side. Mm-hmm. Now, if we look at another aspect of oppression and some of the women that I've worked with and what's going on in our world today, is this abduction of young girls and women and being taken into, forced into sex slavery. It is becoming one of the biggest booming businesses of all time in our modern world. And if we thought slavery was over, this is just like
horrendous.
Yeah,
it's on a whole other level. And again, it's disgusting to think that how prevalent this is again. And you're talking about this country?
Yes. Do you know how big it is in America? And the whole of Europe and UK, they're tied into it.
Right, okay.
We've had cases here in this country. I'm not talking about third world countries. Yes, a lot of the women are pulled out from there, but it's happening here on our doorsteps. UK, America, you know.
It's terrible. I mean, everybody's heard stories, you know, and the thing is what I find is shocking. Because again, going back to, I suppose, the Portugal link, you know, my daughter would be the same age as Maddie. And if we were to listen to what the media are telling people, anybody in this country would think that Maddie was the last child to be abducted. So what do you think about that?
Yeah. Oh, well, she's not, because there's like, it's happening
everywhere.
Everywhere.
And why do you think this is being portrayed in the national media, that, you know, really, if you were to sort of listen to what's going on, you would have this belief system that very few children get abducted, and actually probably the last one that was little Maddie, which was, well, my daughter's 18 now, so that's how long ago it was, right?
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, 18
She's
years.
18. We were living there when it happened. So why does this one child get all of the media attention when children are disappearing daily? I mean, that is absolutely a horrendous thing. And I'm sure you've got stats on all of that. And it's just, you know, what else can people do about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, when you think about that situation and when you think about the news in general with what happens, don't you think that there is still some level of this attitude about white supremacy? It's about what happens on that level. They get the most awareness, the most public you know, awareness for something that's gone wrong, whereas girls are being abducted, you know, from Romania nearly every day. Mm-hmm. Where are those stories?
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of Eastern Europe, India, Pakistan, Africa, girls are being abducted from Africa, taken to India, taken to the USA. What? Why is nothing about that? You know,
I think that's very shameful, and not enough is being done for that. So, are you saying that you do you work with girls, women that have escaped that kind of life?
I was, when I was working at the Women's Center, I was working with them. And but I've kind of moved away now from doing one-to-one counseling and therapy, because I'm going down a different route where it's more going to be about writing through books and articles and things, and speaking like we are doing now to raise awareness. So I want to do more of the speaking, and also I want to do, rather than one-to-one, do group coaching, because then I'm reaching out to more people.
Right. You're helping more people. So, I mean, it must be a very, it's obviously quite a tricky subject, isn't it? And I'm sure, because of the, you know, brainwashing that these young girls go through, that, you know, I suppose, could we possibly be sort of living next to, you know, places where children are being held? I mean, it's really quite frightening. And I can imagine the whole healing process that they need to go through once they actually get out of that, if they do get out of that life.
Mm. I was listening to a talk, I can't remember where it was now, but what they were saying was that really parents should be careful about, you know, giving details out on places like Facebook about their daughters, because sometimes some of these you know, perpetrators, they look to see, you know, where they can find young girls, what time, et cetera, you know. So you could be, yeah, living next door to somebody who's connected, because don't forget, people are out to make a quick buck out of anybody where they can. And if they're tied in with the connections here and there, you know, they will give information for the money.
Right, which is awful. And so how have you found that, obviously yourself, you've had to go through your own healing process because of oppression, which is, you know, yes, cultural and from your marriages and certain things like that. But for the young girls that maybe come out of this, you know, that this is a whole other level, how have you found that whole healing process for them? Because that must be quite a daunting prospect as well.
Well, absolutely. I mean, one of the things is they feel extremely violated of their, you know, boundaries, their privacy, their life. They lose a sense of identity. Who am I? You know, because what they've had to go through, they had to become something that they weren't.
Mm.
And, you know, the experience of that, it's like, obviously, you know, different people are going to experience things differently.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put everyone in the same box, but they will all experience trauma. It's what level of trauma and how. Some people are more resilient than others. So some people will move through their healing process much quicker. But some people, they, you know, who are very sensitive and, you know, they may take a lot longer. So there are many aspects to look at: their identity, their sense of self, their boundaries that were violated, the trauma, you know, can they trust people ever again? They will walk around with this fear. Can I trust this people, this person who's talking to me? Are they going to do something to me? You know, that internal fear that gets created.
Yeah, sure. But there is help for them, right? So that they can make a complete and full recovery from this, even from some of the worst.
I always believe that, I always believe that, you know, where somebody is motivated and willing and they've got the right support, because it has to be the right support, yes, remarkable recovery can be made. And luckily, there are a lot more supportive organizations springing up now. Just in the last 12 to 18 months during this pandemic, I've seen a lot more voluntary organizations springing up, especially in America, because that's where it's really bad, to help, to stop girls being abducted and taken away. But those girls, there is a man, I can't remember his name now, sorry, I've forgotten his name, but he is doing all he can. He's working tirelessly to bring back girls. He follows routes that, you know, to bring back girls that have been taken away.
I think I've heard of this guy. So you know, there is hope. Oh, for anybody that has been through any of that kind of trauma. And is that what you're doing? Is that who you're helping?
Well, my book, the theme is oppression. So it's whichever angle that oppression will come from. Because when you're going through oppression, there are certain, as I said, like, you know, tools, techniques, skills that you have to learn to fight that and overcome it. So that's kind of like my angle. Abuse will come into oppression, you know, definitely. And I've worked with abuse for a long time. It's helping people to find, you know, maybe understand that whatever happened does not define who they are.
Right.
You know, but they can use that experience as a way of empowering themselves, you know, maybe to help other people as well. Mm-hmm. But not letting that define who they are and not letting that limit them from moving forward with their life.
Right. And that is the thing, you know, anything that happens to us. I mean, we see it with things like, you know, even, you know, illness or something or disease. People get so much of an attachment to that thing and that's defined them, and that's not going to help them. So it's the same thing with trauma or abuse. To actually overcome it is, you know, that's not who you are. That was part of your life experience that isn't now. So yes. That makes a lot of sense that, you know, that getting through that is really got to be focusing on, you know, getting rid of, I suppose, this the memory of the past, or coming to accept what happened, which I'm sure must be incredibly difficult, but that's the only way through it, right? Is to accept it, you know, it is what it is. And I know people quite resist against that saying, but until we accept it, because otherwise there's going to be always resistance. And then if there's resistance, then there is going to be a knock-on effect to that, you know, some kind of anger or resentment. And that's not, doesn't help us, does it? Doesn't help us move forward. We have to find some kind of way to accept what happened and that this is the now, and to find some kind of way of just remaining in this present moment where there isn't any danger, there isn't any stress. And I suppose, you know, it is not a natural, it's not your natural instinct, is it really? Because as human beings, that's how we would naturally deal with it. Until we understand how this all works, you know, how we do mentally get over it. And because it's a little bit of, for me, it seems like a bit of a contradiction, because you want your revenge, right? You want your anger. You want your justify and bring these people to justice. But actually, for you to move forward and deal with this and have a happy and fulfilling life is to find a way to actually accept what has happened so that you can move on. It's quite an interesting subject, I think, because it's not our natural response, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, with people that have been shut down and downtrodden and oppressed, what it does to the brain is the brain goes through a shutdown, and then it stops you processing, you know, like the ability to ask questions, the ability to question anything. And so, you know, people have to go through like a rehabilitation. I mean, I've just remembered actually an example where when I left school and I was working, some like social workers and some support workers, and we kind of built up this network where we used to socialize. And we were out on a festival one day, and I was with them, and one of the social workers, he obviously had been observing my behavior, because what he did was he said, "Oh, Jazz, you know that ice cream van over there? It was kind of quite a way away." He said, "Oh, do you mind if I'll give you the money? Do you mind if you go and get an ice cream for us, for all of us?" And I took the money and I started walking, because that's how I was, you know, brought up to be. You do
as you're told.
Do as you're told. And so I took the money and I walked off to go and get the ice creams. They let me walk a certain, you know, distance, but then he came running after me and stopped me, put his arm around me and said, Jazz, I was only joking. I'm not going to get you to walk all that way and bring ice creams for us. I was just watching to see if you were going to do it. And wow. He did, you know, and that made me think. That really made me think. And he said, "You know what? You have to stop saying yes to people."
Right.
He said, "Learn to say no." That was the first time anyone ever said to me, "Start to say no." It wow. just was not in my awareness.
Yes. So you're again, you're on autopilot. And this is the thing, you know, we're all, and you know, we all do it. You know, at the end of the day, we they tell us we have, I don't know, 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day, and over 90% of those thoughts are the same thoughts as yesterday. So we are living, we live our lives on autopilot. Mm. So we, you know, something is said and we automatically do depending on what we've done in the past. So it's almost like we run a program daily. Yes. Yeah. And if we want things to change, we have to change that programming, and it's never going to take. It's never going to happen overnight, is it?
No.
Different subjects that it's going to be a journey. Mm. Nothing is going to be instantly changed, because it's so complex, isn't it? So
I even struggle with it now when I have to say no sometimes, even after all these years and the amount of work I've done on myself. Because it's my natural ability to want to help. So I struggle still with saying no.
Well, I'm sure, because it is, you know, because there's different, obviously there's so many different subjects and different things. So to actually reprogram our brains, you know, when we, you know, all these things are just automatic to us, because we are living habitual patterns every single day on an array of subjects, whether that's what you eat, whether it's, you know, how you get to work, whether it's everything. So I suppose the more, you know, more traumatic something is, the more it is going to affect somebody's mental health. So if anybody's out there that has been going through, that can relate, and this is resonating with, maybe, you know, you're experiencing something, whether it's cultural, whether it's, whether it's even in work, you know, with being treated differently just because you're a woman. I remember reading something the other day, and it was just simple as going into quite a, you know, an executive meeting, and she was the only woman in the room, and the guy instantly turned to her to ask her to write the notes. What, because she's the only woman? You know, so it can be, you know, and that's, you know, some people go, "Oh, you're being picky," but it just goes to show that these are automatic responses. Automatic. He probably didn't even think about it in his mind. He probably isn't sexist. It's just that it's just a habitual pattern that so many people are going through in all sorts of cultures, in every culture. And then, what you know, from what I'm getting from you is the culture that you come from is a whole other level, because it's come from generation, and their actual cultural beliefs. So it's quite a lot. It sounds like quite a lot to get over and to heal.
Gosh, you know what, Karen? I have been doing healing on myself for the last 30 years. I have been working so hard on myself to get to even where I've got to. You know, it's been really intense, and I've been trying to reach out to so many different people and things and, you know, around the world, with healers around the world.
Right.
Because I have been desperate to really heal and overcome and break patterns, programming, conditioning. It's been an interesting journey. And
is that what made you go into to actually initially start your career as being a counsellor? Is that why?
Yeah, that was interesting how that came about, because I went through that was just coming out of my second marriage, and I was left on my own with a child, and it was the first time I had ever been on my own. So I didn't know what, you know, how to live life, and I became suicidal, and there were certain things that happened, and I had this amazing spiritual experience because of the severity of the pain that I was going through. I was given again a message that what I was being told was like, you've experienced so much pain and you're going to go and help people that are going through so much pain. And that's exactly what happened. So the idea about the counseling, it came my way.
Right.
It came my way. It was almost like things started to happen in a synchronizing way.
Right.
And so what happened was, after that spiritual experience, I was doing astrology just to kind of like get out of the house and be with people, because I just wasn't connected to anybody. And at first I thought it was going to be a hobby, but I was quite surprised at the, you know, accuracy of what was going on in my life according to this planetary influence. And so that's something I also became very kind of dedicated to learn. But it was through that, looking at my chart, when the tutor said that your chart, you're a psychotherapist looking at your chart. And I said to him, what's a psychotherapist? I did not know. I'd heard of psychiatrists, but I didn't know what a psychotherapist was. And anyway, even when he told me, I didn't quite take it in. And talking about the synchronicity of events, what happened was, my son, when he started to go to pre-nursery school, I was looking through the paper to see what courses were on at the local college that I could attend. And the counselling one just kept jumping out at me. It was just there, almost like I had to do that. And I felt very drawn to it as well. And the times fitted in, and I didn't have to pay for it. And then, you know, so I just kind of like started on the first level, and I worked my way up all the way to the top. And then after that, I went on to do the hypnotherapy. And I've been learning ever since then, working on my own patterns. The counseling course and psychotherapy taught me so much about myself. It's the first time I started to realize and understand about patterns, how we have these patterns, and how other people treat us because of their patterns. So this is what I started to learn and understand. And it was like this huge awakening. And it was very deep, you know. And I had this hunger, you know, I wanted to know more. And that's why I just kept studying. So it's been ongoing, you know, one thing after another.
Very intuitively.
Yes, very intuitively, yeah. But now I'm slowing down a little bit. Now I'm kind of thinking more along the lines of wanting to write maybe do some retreats abroad for, you know, bringing people together who've been through maybe abuse or oppression or something, and do one, you know, healing work, like group work.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
perfect. So it's just a natural progression. So with regards to, so I know you've co-authored 10 books and now you're working on your own. So to the listeners, obviously, if you're watching this on YouTube, you're watching it on the blog, we will have all of Jaswinda's details and links underneath. So if you want to get in touch with her. But so now I know you've got your yoga as well. So you've got all sorts of things. So what actually do you have to offer right now?
Right now, to the viewers. Okay, well, I have got all of those things are on offer. If people want a one-to-one with me, they want to do a one-to-one sort of like, you know, consultation and see how I can help them, I can offer that. But, you know, I would really say look out for my retreats that are coming up.
Okay, fantastic. And to find the books, can you...
Yeah, sorry, Karen. And also, if you want to be part of anthologies, because that's another thing I'm going to do. So if you want to be an author, if you're not an author yet, or if you are and you want to write a chapter in my book, my one that I'm offering right now is called Breakthrough. I've got a few people that are on board already. I would welcome more. And so if you'd like to be a part of that or future ones that are coming up, then please do contact me.
Fantastic. And so what to the listeners, what is your website?
www.jaz, as in J-A-Z, hyphen, then N-U-R, Nur, which means light, and then .com.
Okay, fantastic. So you've got books, you've written books. So where could people find the previous books that you've co-authored? How would they find them as well?
So if they put my name in Jaswinda Challey, Amazon, it should come up.
Right. So they're on Amazon. You can find them on Amazon. You've got your website, and you'll be looking to do retreats in the future. So for now, so your focus now is going to be going into group. But at the moment, you're doing one-to-one. So if anybody is struggling with anything related to what we've been talking about today, and especially if they come from a similar sort of cultural background, then absolutely get in touch with Jaz, because, you know, just to let them know really that, you know, there really is light at the end of the tunnel. Things mm-hmm. can, there is help. There are ways, as Jaz mm-hmm. has suggested earlier, that there are tools in her toolbox that can help that. And what would you say has been the most beneficial tool so far that you've had to heal what you've been through?
I think it's the hypnotherapy, because it's so fast, so quick, and it works on all the levels. But my hypnotherapy is not like the traditional hypnotherapy, because I combine my hypnotherapy into my yogic understanding and my shamanic understanding. So it's almost like that is my hypnotherapy. Right. It's like a depth type of hypnotherapy. For the viewers, sorry, one more thing, Karen. I am, because of my book and the International Book Award that I won with this organization, they have also made me their ambassador for Europe and the South Asian communities. The organization is called HOPE and then PYX. So if, you know, you are going through any problems or issues, we have a support group, and I can put you in touch with the support group, so you can contact me for that as well.
Fantastic. So meditation. I mean, I suppose you do meditation with your yoga as well.
Yes.
But I suppose hypnotherapy is going to that other level, because it's really bypassing your ego, really, your mind, and going straight into your subconscious. Yes. And if, you know, I do find it interesting that, you know, that it's not talked about enough, because, you know, again, like we're saying about, you know, if we're having repetitive thoughts, which we all do, right, we all, because at the end of the day, our body likes to conserve energy. So if you can do things on autopilot, then it's perfect. So it does make sense that if you're not where you want to be because you've been having the same thought patterns or the same patterns up till now, it does make sense that something needs to change.
Yeah.
And as we all know, it takes a very long time to create new habits when we're doing it, you know, consciously, right? You know, they, I know, depending on who you talk to, they say 21 days. Personally, I think it's a bit longer than that, really, to make long-lasting change.
Yes.
But the way I see hypnotherapy is that it's really going through the, it's going in the back door, really. It's like a cheat sheet.
You know, I had a client, and he's often said to me, I could share his story. So, you know, although I'm not going to share his name, confidentiality. But he smoked 60 cigarettes a day for 55 years. And with just one session of hypnotherapy, he was able to give up.
There you go. So that is fast working. You would think that somebody of that age, somebody that's been smoking for that long, people's perceptions would be that that's impossible to change, right? Yeah. So it just goes to show it's never too late to change. And actually, our habit patterns are just that, are just things that we've done consistently, and it's become lodged and it's become habitual. But there are definitely tools and tricks, you know, whether we should, I always think trick is a negative term. I don't like using that term, really, because it's got a negative connotation. But it is sort of going around the back door to get things done instantly. So there, if something like that can be changed instantly, you know, so many other things. So, you know, you don't have to be suffering. Mm. People don't have to be living unhappily because of what they've been through. There are so many different ways of dealing with that and actually healing from it. And like you've said, Jazz, I'm sure it will always be a continual journey, because otherwise it would be easier to slip back to old patterns, you know. So I'm sure it's going to be a continual journey with these things. But there is, you know, you don't have to suffer. I think that is the message. So I know it sounds like we've been on quite a heavy subject today, but the end result is that you can come out of it as well. You know, there is hope. And so no matter what anybody has actually been through, there are definitely ways of actually healing it and living a very productive and happy life at the end of it. So thank you so much for your time today, Jazz. So once again, for the listeners, if you could repeat your website to them.
www.jazz-nur.com.
Awesome. So thank you very much. And to the listeners out there, obviously, if anybody is out there that is also some kind of coach, therapist or healer, come find me as well. Come if you want to go to KarenRobertsCoaching.com. We basically, if you want to come and be a guest, you can be a guest on here as well. I also have just launched an Ask Karen in my Facebook group. So come to Facebook.com/groups. Six figures and beyond, and in there we'll be giving lots of tips and tools to actually build your business online without being a salesy weirdo, and how to attract your ideal client to actually come to you, and how to transition them into your programs. Because at the end of the day, all of these coaches and healers that I have on board, you know, at the end of the day, they are solving problems. It's all about, if you want the end result, you need to come to them. So if you're going through trauma, you want to get in touch with Jazz, because she is going to help you deal with that. And there is an end solution to that. So, once again, thank you for your time. To the rest of the listeners, then I will be back next week with a coffee with Karen. Bye for now.
Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.